Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 20th day of November 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Andy Schaefer should be here, too, from the Andersons facility near Everly, Iowa. And we'll take a look at the weather forecast, introducing you, in fact, to a brand new segment for the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass. He's with Agrible and works here on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois, too. Should be a great afternoon. Oh, and don't forget to pick up your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference. I know I've told you you can walk in. I had a little discussion about that with the folks at the hotel there, the Marriott. And because it's Thanksgiving week, harder for them to make up for meals. So I'm going to tell you right now, if you decide to walk in, bring that $30. But we may not feed you. I might send you someplace else. We'll just call that your premium. How about that? For making the day. However, you can sign up right now, 800-898-1065 or at farmassetsconference.com to come on Tuesday up next week to the Farm Assets Conference there in Normal, Illinois. Now, let's get started with this edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here what the numbers look like in Chicago. On this Friday afternoon, the December contract in the corn pit finished down a penny today at $3.63 and a quarter. The March at $3.69 and three quarters, a half lower. The May down a quarter at $3.75 and a half. July was unchanged, $3.80 and three quarters. December contract, $3.91 and a quarter, down a half of a cent. Soy complex, January beans, two and a half lower at $8.57 and a half. The March at $8.60 and a half, down two and a half. And May futures at $8.66 and three quarters, down two and a quarter. July off two and three quarters, August down two and a half, September down a penny and three quarters, November beans down one at $8.78 and a half. Bean meal futures were down $3.60 at $2.83, and the bean oil up 35 cents at $27.90. December soft red winter wheat, $4.88 and a half, down two and a quarter. July down 3 cents at $4.95. Hard red July at $4.91 and a half, down five and a quarter. Live cattle futures from Chicago down 27 and a half cents at $129.62 and a half. January feeders at $162.97 and a half, 52 and a half lower. And lean hogs finished down up $2.25.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. Dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Here's what some of the outside markets are trading like at this hour. Ethanol futures, December contract at $1.50 and a tenth. That's a penny and nine tenths higher. Crude oil for the day down $1.15. $39.39, the last trade there. Gasoline on the RBOB, wholesale price down 3 tenths of a cent at $1.28 and 4 tenths of a cent. And heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.37, that's a tenth of a cent lower. Natural gas at $2.14 and 8 tenths of a cent, down 12 and 8 tenths of a cent. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 58 points at this hour at 17,765. The U.S. dollar up 0.556 at 99.62. And the gold futures are currently trading at $1,076.25. They're down $1.65 at this hour. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area. Mostly cloudy today, a 50-degree high. Tonight, rain likely after 4 a.m. That rain could turn to snow. Cloudy overnight with a low of 34. Tomorrow, Saturday, rain and snow, becoming all snow after 11 a.m. Temperatures rising to 36 by 8 in the morning, but they'll turn around and go straight back down. 27 degrees for the high for the day, really, during the remainder of the rest of that day. On Saturday, breezy southwest winds. They'll turn to the northwest at 20 to 25 miles an hour, gust to 38. It's going to be miserable outside, I think. Chance of precipitation, 90%. However, just only about a half inch of new snow accumulation, and then Saturday night, partly cloudy.
This stock and commodity
this is
report
when it gets cold.
Possible.
16 degrees, wind chills. Ooh, we're already talking wind chills. 4 to 11 degrees, blustery, with a west-northwest wind at 15 to 20 miles an hour.
Or on the internet at Batescom.net.
Of course, our programming is sponsored by Bates Commodities. That's out of Normal, Illinois. Our thanks to them. On the phone line right now with us is Mike Zuzulo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, it sounds like we're going to be bringing the winter weather. Maybe it'll get warmed up before the Tuesday meeting, Todd.
The answer is yes. I don't know whether it's going to warm up that quick, but Eric Snodgrass, who's with Agrible and is now going to be doing our Friday weather forecast, I talked to earlier today, and I know we didn't talk about this, but he told me after the fact that we'll go through this cold period. It'll be miserable, a lot of rain. Once we get into Thanksgiving, it's going to warm up. We may get some rainfall. Probably after we get through maybe Thanksgiving Day, maybe Black Friday as well, and then we're going to dive back down into the cold temperatures
again. Hey, that's okay, as long as we get good travel weather, right?
Yeah, if we get good travel weather, that's fine, and I think the travel weather for that should be good. Tuesday shouldn't be too bad. Let's see, and we probably ought to check. Mostly sunny and a high of 46 degrees in the area, so it should be a great day for the Farm Assets Conference. Right there in Bloomington, Normal, Illinois. That'll be a good day. You'll have good travel weather then, too. And we're looking forward to having you come over next Tuesday. By the way, those of you who have not yet bought your tickets, I know I told you you could walk in. We had another conversation, as I just told you, and with the folks at the hotel. Because it's Thanksgiving, it's really tough to have enough on hand. They just don't do it. Actually, we're probably their only event for the week, would be my guess. So if you're going to come, make sure you get signed up. We probably will have a meal for you if you come and just walk in on Tuesday morning. So don't stay away. I think we'll be fine, but don't get surprised if I tell you you need to step off and go somewhere else, and you're going to pay the $30 anyway. How about that? But to avoid that, you can just sign up right now, 800-898-1065. It's going to be a really fantastic day. Speaking of eating, some numbers came out at 3 o'clock. Can you tell me about the cattle on feed figures?
Yeah, good report, I think, going into the holiday. We got the on feed November 1, 102%, Todd. Probably the more important number is that it was below 10.8 million head, just by a smidgen, 10.79 million. Placed at 96%, met the trade guess, the average trade guess, I should say. Marketings for October, 97%, 1 point better than the average, and actually up on the top end of the estimates. So, excuse me, between the marketings being bigger, the on-feed being smaller, I think it was a very good report for the live cattle, tighter supplies heading into the holidays, better demand heading into the holidays via the marketings. And I'll be interested to see if we can't take out the high today in February fats of 133.12. If we do that on a closing basis, may be able to stretch our legs up towards 140 based upon these numbers today. Big thought here, I called around several grocery stores around the region. Biggest turkey I can find, either fresh or frozen, is about 20 to 21 pounds. They're just going to be smaller this year, it seems, because of the PED virus. So I'm thinking that a lot more people, and my family's probably going to do this, have a turkey and a ham to meet the needs of the bigger families. And so I think you're going to have a better red meat consumption this Thanksgiving, and that may spill all the way over into the rest of the holidays. So kind of excited to see what the early week trade is, even though it'll be a thin holiday trade as we get down the road on Tuesday, Wednesday. Hopefully Monday will show some good numbers.
Yeah, the weights on those turkeys probably related to the amount of time they had to
exactly
feed them more than anything else, because it took some time to repopulate, I assume.
Absolutely right, and it's a regional thing. There are some that are able to get some 24-pounders in the frozen side, but very few from what I can tell.
Interesting stuff. Now I'll turn your attention to the grains markets. What kind of day did we have there?
Well, we were locked in. I think those two prevailing forces remained at work today like they have all week, and it kept the longs' hands in their pockets. We have the Argentine election on Sunday. Expectation is that a non-Peronist or a more free market guy is going to win. And we also had a lack of a weather threat in South America. So that kept beans under duress, probably spilled over into the feed grains. I think as a whole this week, with the beans only up about 2 cents in January, you could kind of see with these corn up a nickel, maybe the beans actually were a little bit weighted and kind of pressured the corn, didn't allow it to get above that report day high. Got within about a penny and a quarter of that report day high from November. Other big thing that happened this week, I think, was the meal. The meal market on a weekly basis had an outside week lower down. We're now down to the lowest prices since December of 2011 in the meal. That, I think, definitely weighed technically. Other big thing, obviously, was crude oil. We had the December crude oil expire today. Absolutely amazing ticks in the afternoon trade. Dollar moves that I was seeing here about a half an hour ago, Todd, as we saw the December go off the board. So no one really wanted to step in, I don't think, on the long side in the grains with that crude oil being so volatile.
Yeah, so the crude off the board and those dollar ticks, as you mentioned. So we've got the January will be the lead option, but still we're floating around that $40-$41 level. That's been, I think, the hammer on top of the market. Is that the right way to say it?
The corn and the crude oil look structurally very similar right now. There's a carry in the market, and then carry is telling the producer, the supply side, to store, and that's exactly what we're doing. And so whenever demand perks up, or you talk about gas prices being 74, 75 cents cheaper than they were last year at this time as we go into the holidays, first thing out of the supply side's mouth is, well, look at the structure of the carry or the contango, and you're not going to be getting many buyers as a result of that.
Holiday coming up, Thanksgiving next week. We've talked a little bit about that. Sometimes these are a place where markets turn. Any possibility?
I think this is a possible time period. We've got the crude oil at kind of an inflection point again after the Federal Reserve minutes this week. We've got the CRB and the Bloomberg Commodity Index both showing an inflection point as well, meaning potential shift in momentum if we can get a couple good days underneath us. I think the biggest thing that I'm watching is this post-election mindset. I've been on the phone to several contacts in South America and also in Chicago today in preparation for the meeting next week. And I think the biggest feature to this election is the expectation is there, the non-Peronist, the free market man, Markey, is going to win. If he wins, does he really turn the soybean market into an export market for Argentina? And how does the trade handle the Sunday election victory for him? So what I'll be watching to see is, did the market already factor a lot of this in? And if he does win, does the market then in the soybeans sell the rumor and buy the fact? In other words, we see
right.
Short covering come in. I think that'll be a big deal in terms of answering your question.
Yeah, so just to clarify for those who haven't followed this all the way along, the elections in Argentina, this is the runoff election, the second one, and both candidates are saying they will free up the ability of Argentina to export soybeans, meaning they'll take a tax off of it, and that farmers have been holding on to soybeans for a long time, and that might just dump into the marketplace. So the question really is, what happens when you dump into the marketplace? And they're still in the middle of planting. Will they change their acreage yet this year? I can't imagine that'll be the case. It could be, because rotation is always the root of a better product, especially out of place. Argentina would be much more like we are than Brazil are. Brazil is in the case of weather. I don't know whether you've heard anything about that. And then one other item I'm going to bring you back, and you mentioned the Federal Reserve. Tell me about those minutes, because I'm not quite certain. Did they verify that they're really considering an interest rate raise, and what does that mean?
The minutes were from September,
right?
And so we're talking about a hindsight minutes, but what those minutes did tell us was the Fed is ready to go in December with a rate hike if they see good economic data. Economic data since the September minutes have been good. I think the other big thing the trade, and we talked about this a little bit too, Todd, the big thing I think too in those minutes was the Fed really leaned on the idea that they're going to hit it once and then step away, that one then done type mindset. And the trade picked up on that, and I think that's why we saw the trade kind of flatline and take a little bit of a liquidation sale pressure on Thursday's trade after those numbers and Wednesday's trade after those minutes came out. So I think this is where if the Fed steps back after one rate hike in December, I think that may give the dollar a reason to not need to go any higher and maybe give the commodities a little bit better look as we get into the end of the year.
All right. We'll have more with you on Tuesday of next week. Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd. Look forward to it.
Yep. That, of course, is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Couple of quick things in today's agricultural news. In a last chance effort, Growth Energy and the Renewable Fuels Association met with the Office of Management and Budget this week to tell the White House that the Renewable Fuels Standard is working. Bob Dineen, CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association, and Tom Bias, CEO of Growth Energy, told the OMB that there is no reason for the Environmental Protection Agency to set the renewable volume obligations below the level specified in the statute. EPA, of course, is expected to issue the final RFS rule for the 2014 to 2016 calendar years on or before the 30th day of this month. Dineen said data shows the U.S. ethanol industry would have no problem meeting the 15 billion gallon blending level specified by the statute. Two said the meeting Wednesday was really their closing argument before the administration makes its final decision. And this note from Monsanto, I got something of a chuckle out of it, and maybe you will too. I may have read more into it than I should have. Monsanto executives this week said the company expects corn prices to rise in 2016. However, they added the majority of its growth will come from new products and expanding its reach to new markets. Monsanto held its investor meetings earlier this week. The company expects corn prices will recover to $4.50 a bushel in the next 8 to 12 months from less than $4 currently. That comes just a week after USDA cut its price outlook for the marketing year by 15 cents a bushel to $3.35 to $3.95 on the range. That forecast comes as corn prices are amid, of course, a steep downturn and with other commodities sitting at multi-year lows. 80%, by the way, of Monsanto's earnings over the next 3 to 4 years are expected to be from innovations such as newly developed products. The remaining 20% is tied to the price of commodities like corn and soybeans. And that's a quick look at today's agricultural news. I told you earlier in the week we'd go through the TPP presentation made by the commodity associations at NEFB in the last week. I didn't get through all of them, but we're going to go through a couple more of them today. It was really impressive, I'll remind you, for all of the commodity associations, or at least six of them, to stand up together and be in one alignment as it relates to TPP. Here's what Chip Bowling from the National Corn Growers Association had to say.
For America's corn farmers, this agreement will bring lasting tariff relief, sanitary and phytosanitary provisions that reduce the impact of non-tech tariff barriers, meaning meaningful global progress and synchronous approval of biotech events. The Trans-Pacific Partnership is also good for corn growers because it's good for our friends and partners in the livestock industry. We stand here today because we all want the same thing, more American agricultural products and on dinner tables around the world. We want to see more American corn and more American corn products leaving our shores. We also want more exports of American meat and dairy. When the Japanese are eating more Nebraska beef, that means increased demand for corn. When Iowa pork chops and Kansas City barbecue are on the menu in Sydney, that helps corn farmers' bottom line. My message to our friends in the livestock community is our success is intertwined, and we're here to help. We've invested 5 years in negotiating this agreement. The world is watching. By supporting TPP, Congress can send a powerful message that the United States will lead on trade. We want America's farmers and ranchers to have greater access the Asia-Pacific region, bringing more American meat, dairy, and grain to the world. That's why NCGA members will be going to Capitol Hill in the next few months, asking Congress to vote in favor of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Thank you.
That's Chip Bowling. He's the current president of the National Corn Growers Association. Now here's Bob McCann, the immediate past president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
Just on behalf of America's cattle producers, I'd like to extend a very sincere thank you to all of our ag negotiators from the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative and USDA's Foreign Ag Service, who have truly negotiated a wonderful modern 21st century trade agreement. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, we feel, levels the playing field for U.S. beef overseas, providing significant opportunity for our producers. It's no secret that we've experienced some significant turbulence in cattle markets over the past several months, and there's no doubt that a portion of the turbulence is directly related to challenges in overseas markets. Open and fair markets are crucial to our future in the beef business, and that's why we've worked so hard to support the completion of this agreement. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association and our membership overwhelmingly support open foreign markets and science-based trade standards. We produce the best beef in the world, and we welcome the opportunity to compete for the opportunity to showcase U.S. beef for the 96% of the consumer population that lives outside of this country. But to do that effectively, we must break down tariff and non-tariff barriers to trade, and that's exactly what the Trans-Pacific Partnership does. In 2014, we set export records for U.S. beef with sales exceeding $7 billion. This year, we continue to see strong sales, but it's also clear that we are losing market share to our international competitors who have already completed preferential trade agreements throughout the Pacific Rim. Japan represents the largest market for U.S. beef with sales. This year, we've seen sales decline by more than 11% in our Japan markets. This decline can be tied directly to the signing of the Economic Partnership Agreement between Australia and Japan. This agreement gave beef from Australia better access to the Japanese market, reducing market share for the United States. So rather than seeking one-off agreements, America's cattle producers remain committed to the Trans-Pacific Partnership, knowing that a united front for agriculture would produce greater opportunities for our products. Every day that we delay awaiting the finalization of this agreement, we lose market share to our competitors. So we urge Congress to act quickly in passing the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And for more information on anything having to do with PPP and as it will benefit the cattle industry, I would encourage you to visit a website that the National Cattlemen's Beef Association has set up, I think went live today, and you can get more information about how this wonderful trade agreement will affect our cattle industry. Thank you very much.
That's Bob McCann. He's the immediate past president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, as recorded not this week but the previous week at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City, when most of the associations gathered to put their support behind the Trans-Pacific Partnership. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. The folks at the Andersons not available in Everly, Iowa this afternoon. No worries, just enough time to remind you that if you have not picked up that ticket for the Farm Assets Conference, do it right now at farmassetsconference.com to see all the details, so you probably already know what those are. Or call 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. We will take walk-ins, but whether you'll get a meal that day or not is still debatable. So register right now.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
It's National Peanut Butter Fudge Day. Marcellus Edson received a patent in 1884 for the milling of roasted peanuts between heated surfaces until the peanuts reached a fluid or semi-fluid state. And when cooled, according to the patent, reached a consistency like that of butter, lard, or ointment. On this day in agricultural history in 1820, a whaling ship, the Essex, was rammed twice by a sperm whale and eventually sank. In 1886, Carl von Frisch was born. A zoologist, his studies of communication among bees added to the knowledge of the chemical and visual sensors of insects. In 1906, Greenleaf Picard, a U.S. electrical engineer, was issued a patent for a silicon crystal detector, one of the first devices widely used for receiving radio signals. The detector was revolutionary in that he found that a fine pointed wire known as a cat's whisker in delicate contact with a mineral produced the best semiconductor effect. In 1967, the U.S. population passed 200 million. That according to the census clock at the Department of Commerce. And in 1969, DDT was banned for residential use as a part of a total phase out of its use in the United States. And that's this day in agricultural history.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. On this Friday afternoon, a brand new weather person joins us. Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible. That's a new company here in town that uses big data. Eric, thank you so much for taking the time and being with us going forward now, Eric. I really appreciate that. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself and Agrible?
Sure. So I am a senior atmospheric scientist and co-founder of Agrible, and my role at Agrible is to basically bring in the best weather information that we can possibly bring. So this includes historical weather information as well as the best forecast information. And we're basically putting together products that make producers more efficient and help them maximize profits and minimize efforts. And it's been an absolute blast work for this company. Been had a lot of early success and looking forward to how it unfolds in the future.
So those who are interested and piqued at this point can go to agrible.com. That's agrible.com. We'll talk more probably with you over the time about the company and the products because it's just really cool stuff. But we need to talk about the weather forecast. Looks like we're going to get a little snow in parts of Illinois this weekend.
Yeah, about a week ago, the forecast models began to hint at a system coming out of Colorado. We call them Colorado lows, that's kind of snuck across the Great Plains of the last 24 hours and is currently trying to produce a little band of snow that's going to really hit Iowa, northern Illinois, southern Wisconsin. And it's great. It's got the potential to put down a few inches of snow, pretty widespread blanket of at least 4 inches up there. And there'll be some locations that maybe get more than that. National Weather Service has been putting out the winter storm warnings, and so we're watching it closely. There'll be a pretty sharp divide as you head south in Illinois on where the rain-snow boundary is going to be. But a bigger factor in how the snow is going to impact downstate is the fact that our soil temperatures are still upper 40s, lower 50s. And so a lot of that stuff is going to fall, and it will melt as it does so. I think for downstate Illinois, we're going to start off with a rain event, and then as the cooler temperatures try to work their way in, we might see a switch over to snow. I wouldn't be surprised. South of I-80, and of course getting towards Champaign, Urbana, and then points south of that, we'll get an inch of snow out of this particular system. But it's an interesting one. It was kind of exciting to see it come across, given that we're in an El Nino year, and El Nino years statistically kind of look a little bit warmer and potentially less snow in this part of the world.
Man, that 16-degree low on Saturday night is going to feel awfully cold.
I know.
Let's go to warmer climes. Now, tell me a little bit about South America.
Sure. South America, we were kind of a little concerned starting off the season, and that was because a lot of the main growing region there in Mato Grosso and central Brazil had a drier-than-normal dry season. But the rains do return, and they did. Maybe a couple weeks later than what was optimal, but it's been raining very regularly across the primary regions where they grow beans and corn down there. But overall, because of the El Nino event that's going on historically and statistically, They have good yield years in Brazil for beans when this kind of stuff is happening. You know, we're forecasting another great year for yields out of Brazil, which means that the global markets are going to have a lot of grain to deal with. But given the fact that they keep planting more acres and El Nino conditions are favorable for their yields, I think that this year is certainly going to be another big one for them.
Eric, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with AgriBull right here in Champaign, Illinois. I'm Yovi Extension's Todd Gleason.